Translation by His Divine Grace. Because you have been unable to give charity according to your promise, the rule is that you should go down to live in the hellish planets. So because you have been unable to give charity according to your promise, the rule is that you should go down to live in the hellish planets. Therefore, in accordance with the order of Sukracharya, your spiritual master, now go down and live there. Purport. It is said, Narayana para sarve nakutaskana vibhyati Sargo pavarga narekshu api tulayat darsina. Devotees solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 6th canto, 17:28, and it's in reference to the story of Chitraketu. A devotee engaged in the service of Narayana is always in equilibrium. Equilibrium meaning like balance. Yeah. A devotee actually lives transcendentally. Although he may appear to have gone to hell or heaven, he does not live under either place. Rather, he always lives in Vaikuntha. Sagunam samitvayityam brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Vamanadeva asked Bali Maharaj to go to the hellish planets, apparently just to show the entire universe how tolerant he was. And Bali Maharaj did not hesitate to carry out the order. A devotee does not live alone, of course. Everyone lives with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because the devotee is engaged in his service, he actually does not live in any material condition. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Kitta janmahavayata tuya dasha. Thus he prays to take birth as an insignificant insect in the association of devotees. Because devotees are engaged in the service of the Lord, anyone who lives with them also lives in Vaikuntha. Om Agyanti Mirandasya Jnana Sakalaya Chakshun Militum Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Vanshakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanevanbhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, this is my last day at the glorious Bhaktivedanta Manor, and I want to thank each and every one of you for your two things, your kindness and also your tolerance of me and allowing me to be here and sit here with you in front of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada and Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda. It is my great fortune. Monday and Tuesday, I was not here actually. I went to visit a god sister in Paris and also to have the wonderful darshan of Sri Sri Radha Parasishwara Gornitai and Jagannath Subhadra and Baladev. I feel very blessed that I am getting this abundance of association with the Lord and His devotees. And also it was announced today that there was a departure. The uncle of one of our devotees, and I'm sorry, I don't know, what is your name? Okay. Kavita. So Kavita's uncle had a departure last night, apparently untimely. And he was a friend of Lord Krishna. So therefore we can understand by his association with devotees within his family and his friendliness towards his favorability, towards Lord Krishna and his devotees, that he is actually under the protection of Lord Krishna. And at the same time, as devotees, we still want to offer our encouragement to Kavita and ask the Lord to kindly grant shelter to, what was his name? Bharat. To Bharat Prabhu, Hare Krishna. No. Actually, Srimad Bhagavatam is the glorious rising of the sun in the age of Kali that dispels the darkness of ignorance. Srila Sanatana Goswami, he loved Srimad Bhagavatam so much, and he wrote beautiful verses glorifying the Srimad Bhagavatam that I often like to chant before the class, but I have usually made copies so that we all chant together, and I had no opportunity to do that. But you can, you know, look that up and see these verses. When he was a young lad, he was offered, in a state of a daydream, he was offered a copy of Srimad Bhagavatam by an unknown Brahmin. And he became very attached to the Bhagavatam and studied and read it daily. So, and we understand by regularly attending the Srimad Bhagavatam that regularly, you know, from the first canto, the regular attendance of Srimad Bhagavatam, and by hearing the classes and rendering service to the pure devotee, so this Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. So Prabhupada speaks about this. All that is troublesome in the heart is almost completely destroyed. And the result is loving service to the personality of Godhead, who is praised in transcendental songs, is established. So Prabhupada in his purport explains how here is a remedy for eliminating all the inauspicious things in our heart. Sometimes we're very concerned. I have been chanting, you know, for so many centuries, or so many days, so many minutes, hours, etc. And still, you know, it seems like my heart is filled with so many unwanted things. And it's constantly causing me disturbance. So these things, these inauspicious things in the heart, he characterizes as obstacles to the path of self-realization. And the remedy is the Bhagavatas. So there are the two types of Bhagavatas, and that is the book Bhagavata and the devotee Bhagavata. And both, Prabhupada said, are competent remedies. Both of them are, either one of them is good enough to eliminate the obstacles. And in explaining that the book Bhagavata is as, the devotee Bhagavata is as good as a book Bhagavata, because the devotee Bhagavata leads his life in terms of the book Bhagavata. And the book Bhagavata is full of information about the personality of Godhead and his pure devotees, who are also Bhagavatas. So therefore the book Bhagavata and the person Bhagavata are identical. So here it's also notable, Prabhupada was speaking about this, that it's the Bhagavatas, not Bhagavan, that is being recognized here. That although Vishnu is at the top, Krishna is at the top, but in terms of worship, but even better is the worship as a devotee, because this actually pleases Lord Vishnu. And then he explains that so the devotee, in accordance with following the instructions of the Bhagavatam, becomes Bhagavata. And he also explains that Tulsi, the temple, and preaching, so these three things, are all included as Bhagavata. They are also Bhagavata. So then, of course, we worship Tulsi each morning. We're here in the temple, and we're preaching the glories of the Lord and living our life according to the principles of the Bhagavatam. So in this way, if we really embrace the process, then we're taking the most effective remedy for this age of Kali to remove the obstacles in the heart. And we can expect results. So then, I was mentioning this in class the other day, how sometimes there's some doubt in the mind of the devotees. You know, it's said that if you just chant once, you go back to Godhead, and here I still am. But it doesn't mean you're not going back to Godhead. And by association with the pure devotee, one will become immediately illuminated. I've been associating with pure devotees, Srila Prabhupada, I've been associating with you, serving you, so, why am I not, why am I still in this condition? And Prabhupada gave the example of wet wood. The wood is wet, the spark doesn't immediately occur, so we have to dry out, we have to go through this stage. In other words, devotional service can be an instant process, just like sometimes a person doesn't go to the university and he's given an honorary degree. That can happen, but it's not the general method. One generally has to go through the different stages and go through the different processes, and finally, if he's done everything right, here you are, sir, you have your degree. So in the same way, according to one's determination and level of consciousness, there can be this instant awakening in the heart and full realization. But we shouldn't be discouraged if it's taking a little longer for us, because we're rightly situated. And if you just consider your own life, reflect upon your life, where you were, when you consciously entered into devotional service, when you consciously committed, and maybe that's a problem, maybe you haven't really fully committed yet, sometimes that is an obstacle. But providing you're doing these steps, if you reflect back, you'll see that there's been advancement. But sometimes, you're in the forest and you can't see the forest for the trees. So we're following the process. We're involved in the devotional process, and we sometimes don't realize actually advancement is being made. So it's good to reflect and note that so that you don't become discouraged. And that gives you the determination to increase your efforts. So in this particular situation, Bali Maharaj is being given what you can call a tough love order from the Supreme Lord. If you're familiar with tough love, it means you may love somebody very much. Quite often it's, a parent. But they have a child who has misbehaved, like grossly so, and continuously so. So this tough love is required. To show their love for the child, they have to take a very, harsh, sometimes appears harsh step, a strong step, a deterrent. Just like Mother Yasoda, who was showing her love, and conversely Krishna was showing his love to her, by trying to tie him up with ropes. I see. So the Lord is giving him an order. And we're kind of praying every day at every moment when we utter the Maha Mantra, my dear Lord, please engage me in your devotional service. And we're wondering, when will the Lord come and actually tell me to do something? Then we think, maybe not so soon, because we don't know what will the Lord order us. And what if he gave us a direct order and then we're not prepared to carry it out? You know, so we see by the situation here, he's being ordered to go to one of the hellish planets. Now, Maharaj Bali was a pure devotee. He was born in a demoniac family. But he wasn't, you know, an ordinary son of a demon. And although he considered himself a demon, he was actually a pure devotee of the Lord. He was one of the 12 Mahajans, who are, you know, the great authorities in our spiritual line. So he was ready to accept the order of the Lord without hesitation. The dealings of Vamana Dev with Bali are fully transcendental. And this severe punishment, this so-called punishment, it was actually superficial. In reality, it was a glorification of his pure devotee, Bali Maharaj. Externally, Bali Maharaj feared defamation. You know, one has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So he was actually less concerned over losing his possessions, being arrested, you know, bound up by the ropes of the serpents. He was less concerned about going to the hellish planets than he was by being defamed. But still, when the Lord was sending him, you know, go, you go, he was accepting to do this. So in the, they give a reference to the Srimad Bhagavatam in the sixth canto. And in this situation, I'll get back to that. The Lord is explaining in the Bhagavatam, and he's in several cases, there's these orchestrated leelas. So just like this leela with Bali Maharaj, it's like a script. You know, the Lord has prepared this script here. You do this, you do that at this time. I mean, it's not a script in hand, but it's the scripted by the desire of the Lord. And it will show the depth of Bali's wonderful qualities. And one of those wonderful qualities was that he was not resentful. You know, oh, you're telling me to go down to hell? You know, he was ready to go. He was happy to accept the order. He was the grandson, as you know, of Prahlad Maharaj. So he was coming from great lineage. And now he was the king of the Asuras. And it was as a king, it was in his role as a king that it was his duty when he led the demons in battle against demigods and conquered Indra. So this misbehavior on Bali's part was actually part of his kingly duty, and it was part of this orchestrated situation that was bringing about his current sentence, go to hell. You know, I mean, how many times we might feel like saying this to somebody, you know, that if the Lord says it, you know, if we said it, it would be greatly offensive. And the person would resent it like anything, and, you know, it would create some friction. But it created joy in the heart of Bali. So then there was the reference to, in the third canto, there's a reference to how the Lord always protects, first canto, third chapter, sorry. So the Lord always protects the pious demigods. And he incarnates to vanish the demons, and the demons are characterized because they're always envious of the demigods. So this was a result, the appearance of Vamana was a result of the prayers of Aditi, the mother of Indra. Because, you know, if a mother sees her child being compromised in any way, even if the child is, you know, number one rascal child, still by the motherly love. If she chastises, that's one thing. If somebody else chastises, it's not tolerable. and the nature as the mother is, it doesn't matter, it's my son. You know, if sometimes you see in really nasty court cases, a person has committed abominable, you know, behavior. So they're, you know, trying to find someone who might say something good about this person to, you know, in hopes the judge will hand a lesser sentence. So quite often they bring the mother because nobody else has anything good to say about the person. And the mother will say, you know, that wasn't my son. My son was this, my son was that, such a good person, such a good boy, and he had such a hard childhood, but, you know, I love him. You know, it's just purely based on, you know, the sentiment of the motherly love. So Adichie, she had this sentiment of motherly love, so she prayed, and as a result of her prayers, Nirvamana incarnated. And he had a special weapon. Does anybody know what that weapon was? Vamanadi? Huh? Yeah, it's beauty. So, and also we heard in class the other day that Lord Chaitanya's weapon was his beauty, you know. So, the Supreme Lord, in his original form, he's full of all opulences. But when he descends or incarnates or he comes as an avatar, then there's only certain manifestations of his different powers, just as much as required for the particular function or particular situation. So this doesn't mean that there is some limitation on the part of the Lord. There's an example given by Srila Prabhupada in this connection that you have here, we're in a room and there's some little light bulbs. And there is another maybe big, huge power plant with some dynamos. And both this little light bulbs and the big dynamo, they are getting their energy from one source. So just because there's some little light bulbs, it doesn't mean that that source is diminished. Whether it's the little light bulbs or the big dynamo, the source is still full of power. So the Lord is not diminished. His power is not diminished. His beauty is not diminished. His fame is not diminished. His opulence is, you know, none of these opulences are diminished if only partial, if only they're partially displayed by one or another incarnation. So then there's some example, you know, I can give some examples. Parashuram and Nrsingadeva and Jamadagni, they were displaying the power to kill. And of course, most of us are very much inclined towards Nrsingadeva as being the benevolent killer on behalf of the devotees. I don't know how we'd feel about Parshuram coming in and knocking us off 21 times. But, and then the Lord, he empowered, you know, the empowered incarnation of Narada, and he empowered the plenary incarnation of Varaha, and indirectly he empowered Buddha to create faith in the people of the world. And then Rama and Dhanvantari were incarnations that were displaying the Lord's fame. And then, as mentioned, Vamanadeva, Balaram, and Mohini, and they were exhibiting the Lord's beauty. So these are, you know, different attributes. Then Naranarayan Rishi was exhibited renunciation. Jai. Actually, it's expressed that his renunciation was like a thunderbolt, their renunciation. And then the Kapila, Kumara, Matsya, Dattatreya, all of them, they were exhibiting transcendental knowledge. So it's only the primeval Lord Krishna, who we see standing there with his flute, only the primeval Lord Krishna that has full opulences at all times. And then, of course, Lord Krishna, although he has full opulence and full strength, power, beauty, renunciation, etc., he can be defeated by what? Yeah, and how is that love exhibited? Yeah, but how is the devotion? What prompts it? Huh? Well, that's also a symptom of, it's an S word. The surrender, you know. Yeah, so the, this is from the same part of the Bhagavatam 1.3. So the, when the devotee surrenders, of course that, you know, empire, of course there is surrender under fear and duress, but the surrender to the Supreme Lord doesn't, you know, for the devotee is through love. And that conquers the heart of the devotee. So then the devotee becomes subordinate. I mean, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, becomes subordinate to the devotee. So here he's sending Bali down, and he's sending him to one of the hellish planets, the planet of Sutala. And Bali, he's agreeing to this. He's happy to go. And Sutala, there's Atala, Vitala, Sutala, then I think Talatala, right? And then a couple more. Yeah, so these are all these like hellish planets. But the amazing thing is he's sending him down to this hellish planet, Sutala. But what is he doing? He's agreeing to remain there as his doorkeeper. You know, so that's a fairly extraordinary sentence. Go to hell, and by the way, I'll stand there. I'll be your doorkeeper. But then I was looking up the hellish planets. I was kind of, you know, the ones that were mentioned. I was thinking, what are these planets like? So the sun does not reach these planets. They're illuminated by jewels. One time Srila Prabhupada compared London to a hellish planet because there was no sunlight. But the jewels were also absent. But then one other time he said that the jewels are represented by my devotees. It was very sweet. So the demons and the rakshasas live there with their wives and their families, their children, and then their main engagement is sense gratification. But they don't become old, they don't become diseased, and they're not afraid of death, but they do have one fear, and that is the Supreme Lord in the form of time. So, and then Lord Shiva and Lord Gauri, they reside on Vitala. And it said there is a special kind of gold that is produced there called Hataka, but I couldn't find a, you know, a description why that gold is special. Maybe you know. Anyways, I wouldn't recommend going there to find out. But, and then the, this Chitula, this first planet, was produced by the yawning of a demon. And guess who lives on that planet? Women, yeah. Three types of women. So does anybody want to hear what kind of women live on the... Remember, it's a hellish planet. So there are like three types. The men all like this. this is one of those, you know, information I call it for men only. They'll appreciate. Anyway, the only kind are the independent ladies, the lusty ladies, and those ladies that are easily subdued by men. So we can understand that devotee ladies do not fit these categories because neither are they living in this hellish place, but they're committed to serving the lotus feet of Guru and Gauranga. So then it said, it was mentioned this 6:17. So this verse in 6:17:28 is mentioning that devotees solely engage in devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they only engage in Narayana service, and they never fear any conditions of life. So the demons may be in a so-called not fearing, they're not fearing anything. But what are the demons doing? They're engaging in sense gratification. So what is the hope for them? But the devotees, they don't fear any condition of life. So neither the heavenly planets or the hellish planets are all the same. Even liberation, it's not an attractive feature for them, because the only interest for the devotees is the Lord's service, and that Prabhupada describes as their excellence. And this was the excellence of Bali Maharaj. So one who is powerful, at the same time, there's like one, the example, this in this particular verse, it was discussing from this sixth canto, it was discussing the incident where Chutaketu, who had gotten the favor of Shankarshan, and he had this, although he was a devotee, he got a little tinge of pride. And, you know, it's such a subtle thing, this pride. You know, your devotees, we don't want it, but it comes over you sort of like a bad smell comes. You don't want it, you know, but it comes over you sometimes. So it kind of happened to him like that. And when he saw, he was traveling around, he saw the, you know, Parvati sitting on Lord Shiva's lap in a public place. And there was some kind of exchanges going on between them. So he laughed out loud. They were in a public place means actually he was in an assembly of his ministers and followers. Lord Shiva was sitting among his people. So Chitraketu laughed out loud. And, you know, many things were to be learned from this thing. Lord Shiva didn't take offense. And it was explained that Chitraketu actually didn't offend Shiva. Unlike Daksha, Daksha did offend Lord Shiva by his behavior. But Chitraketu did not, because actually he was expressing his wonder. Although it was looking like a criticism, and it was a criticism, yet his intention was more like, look at that. He's sitting there with his beautiful wife on his lap, and he's not even agitated or disturbed. You know, what a wonder. At the same time, you know, and there's a word, the Mahabharata Dara, that means one who doesn't fall down, or one who hasn't fallen, one who is not affected by a situation. So this was going on, he laughed out loud, he made this, you know, remark, and Shiva just gave a little smile, but he remained silent, and all his followers did the same. And the reality was, Chitraketu was a little concerned to see this behavior by such a powerful and prominent personality as Lord Shiva. And in his mind, he was thinking, you know, yad yad arachate, you know, whatever action the great man performs, the common man will follow. Whatever standards is set by such a person, this is exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So he's sitting like that with his beautiful wife. What can we expect from the common person? So he was not, you know, he wasn't trying to bring Shiva down. He was actually, you know, if you love somebody, you don't want to see them criticized in any way or made to look unfavorable. So he had that kind of a concern. At the same time, there was that little vapor of pride. So Prabhupada in his purport points out that the Vaishnavas are always meek and humble and respectful of others in Trinadapi Sunijana. So because he was subtly thinking in a subtle way, wasn't even maybe a thought that he could express. It was that subtle vapor. He was thinking he, Chitraketu, was a better controller of his senses than Lord Shiva. Shiva smiled, he was silent, but Parvati, his wife, she was disturbed by this. If anybody is married among the ladies, you know you don't want to hear anything about your husband. Whether he's, you know, a great husband or not a great husband, this is your husband, and he hears something is very disruptive to the heart. So here was a great husband, she was on his lap, and this impudent person, how he's speaking, And she started to speak in a sarcastic manner. So, you know, now he's master of everything. You know, he is, you know, taken up the rod and the ruler of punishment. But she's saying this in a sarcastic way. You know, he's ahead of Brahma, he's ahead of Bhrigu, Narada, the four Kumars, Manu and Kapila. Have all of them forgotten religiosity, and now only he knows what's going on? You know, so it reminded me when she was saying like that, so have they all forgotten religiosity? You know, it must be because they didn't say anything. They just, they let this happen. The one time there was this incident, it was like an innocent thing, kind of. It was in Los Angeles, and a few devotees had learned some Bharatanatyam dancing. At that point in time, it was kind of a novelty. You know, not too many people knew how to do all this stuff, and they decided to have a demonstration for Srila Prabhupada. And they did it in the temple room in front of the deities, except that the dancers' backs were to the deities. So Prabhupada immediately stopped it, and he goes, what is, you know, stop. How is this? Your back is to the, their back is to the deities. So some of the devotees, he goes, who has told you to do like this? You know. So some of the devotees said, well, I won't give the name because he's departed. And, I mean, physically and other ways, he departed. He was associated with this yatra, actually, for some time. So-and-so said, Prabhupada said, oh, Rupa Goswami says you should not put your back to the deities, but so-and-so, he says. And then Prabhupada hit slammed the desk. He says, call the GBC. And he got the GBC members all together and he was berating them. But that type of thing, when the great authorities are present, are they have given their verdict, then we should, you know, follow that. And in this case, she was speaking in this sarcastic way. So, my Prabhupada also spoke in a sarcastic way. Oh, so-and-so says, you know, Rupa Goswami says, but our so-and-so says, you know, I can jump over the head. So then Parvati's really upset, and she goes, he must be punished. And she speaks to him, my dear son. I mean, she's angry, but she called him, my dear son. You know, now take birth in a low, sinful family of demons. And this way, so this is actually her motherliness, you know. She was upset, she was angry, but the motherliness, she didn't want to like smash him and pulverize him. She wanted to correct him. She wanted to rectify him. So you take birth in a family of demons, so you will not commit such offenses again toward the exalted saintly persons. So you know, again, we had, you know, Yasoda tried to correct, you know, and rectify her naughty son. And in this way, we see the punishment from Mother Durga was offering a better, I mean, actually it was a blessing. Prabhupada kind of describes like that. It was a boon. He uses the word a boon. Because after this birth, as a demon, he was promoted directly to the Vaikuntha. So, Bali Maharaj is getting a heavy benediction. Go to the hellish planets. But I'll stay there as your doorkeeper. And in due time, you will attain the heavenly throne. So the lesson we can learn is Sate Nukampamam Sushamiksana, that the devotee is always accepts a punishment from anyone, actually, as coming from the Lord, as the Lord's mercy. It's we can say, a hard pill to swallow. Somebody's treating me like this, and I have to, this is the Lord's mercy. But yes, this is what the Bhagavatam says. And that the devotee sees whatever reversal occurs, it's due to his own impious deeds. I'd be thinking, I didn't do anything. I mean, that's what usually, what did I do? You know, we don't know what we've done. You know, few lifetimes ago, last life. You know, we don't know where things are coming from sometimes. So the devotee never accuses anyone and remains increasingly attached to the Lord due to the becoming purified in this way. And Prabhupada says in the purport, you know, the devotee is never, not the purport to this verse, but the other one, is that the devotee is never subjugated to the law of karma. And he sees that the Lord is acting through their heart. So in the same way, Parvati, she was cursing to end all of the material reactions of, you know, in this way, through her curse, therefore Prabhupada calls it a voon, because all of the material reactions would end. And then the next lifetime, he becomes Vichasura, and then he goes back to Godhead. So in this verse, Tatena Kapam, that there are some points. And one is that the devotee earnestly awaits for the Lord to bestow his causeless mercy. But during that time, it's you know, it says patiently suffering reactions to past misdeeds. And all the while, so those two dynamics are going on, and all the while, within the heart of the devotee, no matter what is going on, he's offering the Lord respectful obeisances within his heart and within his work, his activities, and his body. And because of this, it says the devotee is eligible for liberation because it has become his rightful claim. So we see that the previous acharyas also cited this verse. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has cited this verse. And Srila Prabhupada, over and over again, would cite this verse as an example for us, how we have to respond to things that we may initially question. And in doing so, the devotee, if one actually accepts in this mood, then one actually becomes purified, and by that purification one will naturally go back to Godhead. So we see Bali Maharaj exhibiting these same qualities. He's not resisting, he's not challenging the Lord, he's not angry. In fact, he's ecstatic. So just a few thoughts I had on this verse, and if somebody could like to offer further, can please do.